So I think what the Supreme Court might do is actually strike down the concept that the Federal Reserve is independent and make it clear that all the FOMC members serve at the pleasure of the president. And the president can fire whoever he wants for whatever cause he believes justifies the firing. Because he was elected president, he's got the power, the people trust his judgment, and therefore, if he believes that a FOMC member, for whatever reason, is not fit for the job, then he can remove them. That is the risk, because that will destroy Fed independence. Now, yes, if Trump wants to nominate a replacement FOMC member, the Senate is going to have to approve the nomination. Now, the Senate might, right? The Republicans might. But even if there aren't enough Republicans who want to play ball with what the president is doing, he doesn't need replacement nominees. Even if they're short, they can still convene and rule. So as long as Trump gets rid of enough board members who oppose what he wants to do so that his guys or gals are in the majority, then even if there aren't enough, so he can fire every single FOMC member until the majority that remains will do what he wants, because the policy is made based on majority vote, right? So if there's only three FOMC members left, it's two out of three wins, right? So, but this is going to show the world that there is no independent Federal Reserve. And, you know, we've been touting the independence of the Federal Reserve for a long time as this is why you should trust the dollar. This is why you should trust our monetary policy, because the Fed is independent. It's above politics. But if that's not the case, if it's completely political, if the president effectively controls the Fed, meaning that when we elect a new president, we're simultaneously electing a new Fed chairman. In fact, a lot of people have said that the most powerful job in the country is chairman of the Federal Reserve. Well, how can the most powerful position in the government, right, be for an official that's not even authorized by our Constitution? I think it will be very easy for the Supreme Court to declare the whole thing unconstitutional. Now, I don't think they're going to wipe out the Fed completely. I think they're just going to say, in order for the Federal Reserve to be in conformity with the Constitution, it must be accountable to the President of the United States, must be accountable to the Congress. It can't be some independent authority that exists on its own to do whatever it wants, right? I think that that is what they're likely to rule. And that's going to send shockwaves throughout the global economy, financial market, because now people are going to realize that, you know, it's going to be debt monetization, right? There is no independent check that's going to force Congress or the president to ever act fiscally responsible. Why should they? Once they control the Fed and they have the printing press, why should they ever cut spending, right? Just print whatever they need. They'll keep interest rates as low as they need. And this is a huge risk that nobody is talking about, the loss of independence. And of course, what I don't expect the Supreme Court to do is recognize why the Fed was independent. Because it's not a government agency. That's the lie. The Federal Reserve is a private banking cartel. The member banks are not owned by the government. They're not part of the government. Even the Federal Open Market Committee, even though they're appointed, the members are appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. They are appointed to roles outside the government. And once they are appointed, they are not accountable, right? Once you appoint them to their 12-year term, they do whatever the hell they want. Right. You know, you can't say I don't like your decisions. For cause doesn't mean because you don't like, you know, their monetary policy. Right. That if you could just get rid of them because you didn't like their monetary policy, there would be no point of a 12-year term. The whole point of a 12-year term is so you can't get rid of them. Now, obviously, if there's a real legitimate reason that has nothing to do with their policy decisions, then yes. And you can't concoct a reason. If it's obvious that the reason is you disagree with their policy decisions, and so you go looking for dirt, then that doesn't count. right? Because it's obvious what you're trying to do. You're trying to remove somebody for their policy choices, which you have no authority to do, and you're trying to use this phony, you know, mortgage thing as a way to do it. But again, the reason that the Fed is independent, and this is not something that this court is going to address, is that what the Federal Reserve does, right, issuing paper money, is something that the U.S. government has no constitutional authority to do. That's why it didn't do it. That's why it created the Fed. It created the Fed to do something that it could not do itself. Why? Because the monetary powers of the Federal Reserve are created in Article 1, Section 8. And in Article 1, Section 8, the federal government is given the power to coin money and regulate its value. Coin money. That's it. What does coining money mean? Well, it means taking money and making a coin out of it, right? Not a paper bill, a coin. And what is money? Well, money is defined in the Constitution as gold and silver. How do you know this? Because Article 1, Section 10 says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin legal tender. Okay, so that's money, gold and silver coins. That's legal tender, nothing else. That's all the Constitution. Now, somebody might say, well, that says no state can make anything other than gold and silver. It doesn't say the federal government. It doesn't have to, because the way the Constitution is written, the federal government can only do what Congress, what the Constitution authorizes it to do. The states can do whatever they want, as long as the Constitution doesn't prohibit it. That's why the Constitution says no state shall coin money or emit bills of credit, right? So states can't make their own money and they can't emit bills of credit. What's a bill of credit? That's paper money, right? So the states are banned from printing paper money, but the federal government is only authorized to coin money. It is not authorized to emit bills of credit. And in fact, the earlier drafts of the Constitution, and you can see this in the Eliot debates, the earliest draft said Congress shall coin money and emit bills of credit. And by a vote of 9-2, they removed emit bills of credit. So it wasn't an oversight. They deliberated allowing the federal government to issue paper money, and then they decided, no way. We don't want to allow it, right? We had a bad experience with the Continental, right? We don't want any paper money. So the Constitution was written to ban paper money, right? So it would never exist, at least not from the government. Now, private banks, they were allowed to emit bills of credit all they wanted, right? Private banks could issue banknotes, and they did issue banknotes. And that's why we ended up getting a central bank, and the Federal Reserve was basically there to rediscount commercial paper issued by other banks. I don't even want to get into all of the rationale behind why people thought having a central bank was a good idea. But the fact of the matter is, it had to be private. It couldn't be part of the government because then it would be unconstitutional. So it had to be this separate thing. Now, in my opinion, the way they went about creating it, I think that's unconstitutional too. And that's what I think the current Supreme Court is going to rule, that this setup, right, of this independent Federal Reserve is unconstitutional and it has to be part of the government, but it's not. And in fact, all these people keep referring to the Federal Reserve as a government agency. It's not a government agency. Look, I talked about the letters I received back in the 1980s from Alan Greenspan. When I wrote him a couple of letters back then, I was just out of college and I disagreed with his monetary policy. And so I wrote him some letters. And I used his own words against him. I quoted him to him from, his essay about gold that was in Ayn Rand's book, Capitalism, The Unknown Ideal. And this was right after the 1987 stock market crash. And so I didn't like, the money he was printing to try to, prop everything up. And so he wrote me back a couple of letters, which I still have. But anyway, those letters had stamps on them, right? When you get a letter from a government agency, they don't pay postage, right? It gets franked, right? So any official government letters that you receive, the government doesn't charge itself money, right? Because the government owns the post office. So the government doesn't pay itself. It just sends out the mail. But when the Federal Reserve chairman sends out a letter, he has to buy a stamp. Why? Because he's not part of the government. That's why. If it was part of the government, why is he buying a stamp, right? So it is separate, but it was separate for a reason. Now, people might say, well, there were some legal tender cases, some Supreme Court cases that said paper money was constitutional. Not really, right? Here's what happened. And I don't want to go over all the case citings. You can look them up. I forget them off the top. You know, Knox versus Lee, Hepburn versus Griswold. I forget them all. You know, my dad went over all these with me years and years ago, and I didn't look them all up, you know, before I did this podcast. But paper, the U.S. government did issue paper money during the war, during the Civil War. And they were the greenbacks. And there was a constitutional challenge to the government issuing greenbacks, right? Because obviously it can't do it. And the Supreme Court ended up upholding the constitutionality of the greenback. But in doing so, it did not look to the monetary part of the Constitution. It didn't say that coin money includes issuing paper money. It knew that wasn't the case, right? So it didn't even bother to look to that section. Instead, it looked at the necessary and proper section and said, look, it was an emergency. We were in the middle of a civil war. And because of this emergency, the government could do in a wartime emergency what the Constitution would not authorize in peacetime. So that first case only agreed that the government could directly print money as a wartime emergency, right? Not like it could just do it under normal, peacetime conditions. So it was an emergency, war power only. It was like, hey, if we didn't win the war, the whole country was gone, right? It was so why can't the government do this as an emergency? You know, kind of like, you know, they can put troops in your house. You know, they need something for an army or stuff like whatever. There's sometimes in emergencies, they commandeer something. They can take your property. They could use it for the war. So if they can do that, they can certainly take your property and give you paper money, right? That was it. Now, the paper money was redeemable in gold and silver. It wasn't like fiat. It was paper money that was eventually redeemable, right, in gold and silver. Now, here's what happened. The notes that they issued had a maturity date. And a lot of these notes matured. And so the government reissued them, right? The war is over. And the government reissued these notes. Now, somebody else challenged it and said, wait a minute, the war is over. The Supreme Court said that you can only issue these notes during a wartime emergency. We're now at peace. What the hell are you doing? You can't do this. Went back up to the Supreme Court again. And the Supreme Court said, well, because the notes were originally issued during war, they could be reissued when they mature. Like the government doesn't, you know, can keep rolling these things over because they already exist. So the ones that already exist that were created during a war, they could stay. Right. So now the court ruled that. Now, if you try to say that paper money is unconstitutional, that's the case they point to. Right. But all that case said was that paper money redeemable in gold issued during a war can be reissued after the war. There has never been a Supreme Court case that has said the federal government can issue irredeemable paper money, right? Paper money backed by nothing. During peacetime, right? It's never happened. Now, I don't expect the current court to recognize this and declare any paper money unconstitutional and force us to go back to the gold standard that we had before the Federal Reserve. They're not going to do that. They're not going to disrupt all of that. But I do think they are willing to disrupt to help Trump. I think they will disrupt the concept of Fed independence and say that the Fed needs to be part of the government, which totally destroys the purpose that it wasn't, because had they tried to make the Federal Reserve part of the government initially, the act never would have passed. And it would have been held unconstitutional, obviously, because the government doesn't have the power to do this. So they had to create this private bank so it could do what it had no authority to do, because private banks are allowed to issue credit They're allowed to issue bills of credit. In fact, before the Federal Reserve, there were bank notes that circulated from all kinds of banks that people used as currency that were backed by gold. You know, the idea was just to centralize that. So there was one note. So instead of, you know, people walking around in their wallet with notes from different banks, let's say I took the train out to California and I wanted to buy something and I had a note from a bank in New Jersey. What if the guy in California never heard of that bank? How do I know that's legitimate? So there were, the idea was that when I got a note from a bank in New Jersey, I would give it to the Federal Reserve. They would take that note and issue a Federal Reserve note that was backed by that note plus gold, 40% gold. And now I'd have a Federal Reserve note. So when I went out to California with my Federal Reserve note, everybody recognized it, right? That was the whole idea. But all of this was private. You know, another idea behind the Federal Reserve was to create an elastic money supply. That was like an important thing. And what an elastic money supply meant was that when the economy expanded, the Fed could expand the money supply. But when the economy contracted, the Fed would contract the money supply. Now, that is the opposite of what they do now. See, what the Fed does now is when the economy is expanding, they expand the money supply. But then when the economy contracts and we have recession, they expand it even faster. Right? So that harebrained scheme, had they talked about that, you know, when they were passing the Federal Reserve Act, nobody would have voted for it, right? Because that would have just been inflation. And also, again, remember, the original Federal Reserve was not even allowed to buy U.S. treasuries, right? That's part. If it was a government agency, obviously you could buy U.S. treasuries. It was banned. It couldn't buy them. It couldn't have them on its balance sheet, right? I don't even think they would have passed the Federal Reserve Act had, in its original form, it been allowed to own treasuries, because people would have seen through that and said, wait a minute. This could be too cozy a relationship. If the Fed can buy treasuries, you know, they could kind of monetize debt. We'll have too much debt. So no, they probably wouldn't have passed it. That is the example of the camel's nose under the tent, right? The slippery slope. You never allow the government an inch, because once they get that inch, they're going to take a mile, right? So we did a lot of damage by opening the window. That's why, you know, this bank should have been shut down. But the problem is where we are now, having Congress or the president controlling the paper money supply is worse than having the Fed do it. And, you know, people think, hey, Peter, why are you defending the Fed? I'm not defending the Fed. I'm the Fed's biggest critic. I just think it'll be even worse when it's being controlled by the president, right? As bad as the Fed has been when it had a modicum of independence, imagine how what's worse is going to be when it has none. But this is the threat that is